Good evening and welcome to this meeting of the Canterbury-Bankstown Local Planning Panel on the 13th of October 2025. I declare the meeting open at 6 p.m. I'll start with the acknowledgement of country. The Canterbury-Bankstown Local Planning Panel acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land, water and skies of Canterbury-Bankstown, the Darug people. The panel recognises and respects Darug cultural heritage beliefs and relationships with the land, and the panel acknowledges the First Peoples' continuing importance to the Canterbury-Bankstown City community. My name is Julie Walsh and I'm the chair of this evening's panel, and also sitting with me are Lindsay Day and Alison McCabe as expert members and Vicky Chen as the community representative representing the Bass Hill ward. The panel members carried out a site inspection in respect of the only item on the agenda tonight before the meeting, and we've received a briefing from the council officers. We've read the business papers and we've been provided with copies of all of the submissions, including a number of late submissions. All of the panel members have completed a written declaration that they have no conflicts of interest in relation to the item on the agenda this evening, but I'll just double check that that's still the position, that you still have no conflict of interest?
No conflict.
And I similarly have no conflict. I'd like to declare the minutes of the Canterbury-Bankstown Local Planning Panel meeting held on the 8th of September 2025 have been confirmed as correct by the chair of that meeting. So there are a number of speakers registered to speak this evening. We do them on the basis that objectors go first, or submitters go first, members of the public, followed by representatives of the applicant. This is not a question and answer session, but an opportunity for members of the public to express their views directly to the panel. The time limit for speakers is 3 minutes, and there will be a bell sound after 3 minutes. And if the person speaking requests an extension of another 2 minutes, I can grant that at my discretion. And in that circumstance, the absolute maximum would be 5 minutes. Oh, sorry?
Sounds
good. Oh, okay, I'll just speak up a bit more. So after the meeting has concluded, we will enter into a closed session where we will determine the development application and we'll aim to have the minutes on the council website by Friday. As I said, there are a number of speakers in relation to members of the public. There's no need to repeat what other members might have said, so and you can assume that we've read all of the submissions, so there's no need to repeat everything in your submission. Probably best if you concentrate on any comments you have in relation to the council officer's report and your main points. So with that, I will now start with the first registered speaker, who is Councillor Barbara Currie. If you could come forward. And just before you start, I understand, if you could just clarify this when you start, that you're speaking as an individual objector, not on behalf of the council. Thank you. Oh, sorry. When you speak, if you can confirm that you're speaking as an individual objector, that you're not speaking on behalf of the council. Thank you.
Sorry, I am here as an individual private citizen. Thank you. But I am a former deputy mayor and I'm a current, I'm a lawyer as well. Thank you, Madam Chair. Look, I would like the indulgence of the committee, if I may, read out a letter, excerpts of a letter that I sent to King Charles earlier this year, if I may, Madam Chair. It will take a couple of minutes. Your Majesty, King Charles, I hope you're well and in good health. I'm writing to you for your urgent and kind intervention to prevent the demolition of a beautiful Anglican church, St Paul's Bankstown, of which I represent in the local government area of Canterbury-Bankstown. I am the former Deputy Mayor of Canterbury Council, which was merged with Bankstown in May 2016, making it one of the largest residential councils in Australia. Unfortunately, Your Majesty, I find myself almost a lone voice as an elected opponent of this unfortunate decision by the New South Wales Anglican Diocese to demolish this wonderful church in toto for high-rise development. In effect, It appears that the diocese has turned into a property developer at the expense of maintaining its history and sense of community in some parts of our city. I note that St Andrew's Church in Lane Cove is being also developed by the Anglican Diocese, and this lovely church is being retained whilst an eight-storey building is being built at the back of it, and the diocese needs to be congratulated for doing this for the community. However, I am disappointed that the same standard has not been applied to St Paul's at Bankstown, which is very historically and socially significant, much more than Lane Cove. The former Bankstown Council resolved in 2015 to place an interim heritage order on the site. However, by 2016, they resolved to discontinue with this course of action. By way of background, Your Majesty, I will outline the issues as follows. St Paul's Church is demonstrative of the works of the architect Norman Willard McPherson, who was responsive to trends in ecclesiastical architecture in the interwar and post-war era. He has designed a number of significant Anglican, Methodist and congregational churches. The site at 459 Chapel Road, Bankstown, is comprised of the church and rectory with its unusual pre-Reformation and almost monastic grounds. The church fabric is locally noteworthy with quality brickwork and timber joinery and fittings, and the tower provides a stunning landmark for Bankstown. The church has local historic associative significance due to its association documented in the walls, in the windows and furniture and fittings with the involvement of the English and Fitzpatrick families. St Paul's parishioners Alan Richard Maunsell died in 1944 on a HMAS ship hit by the Japanese suicide pilot, and Bruce Marshall died in 1942, World War II in Papua New Guinea, both aged 21 and both have been parishioners of St Paul's. Alan Maunsell was a Sunday school teacher at the church. Bruce Marshall was a son of the minister, Hugh Marshall, at St Paul's. Of note is the fact that there are three other churches designed by McPherson, which are heritage listed items by their respective councils, being as follows. The Mossman Uniting Church and Hall, 38A Balmoral Road, Mossman. The Uniting Church Group, comprising the church, the parsonage and the fence, 134 Wagonga Street, Naruma, Yirrabadalla Shire. The All Saints Cathedral Group at Bathurst, 1970 works. 11 Church Street, Bathurst, Bathurst Regional Council. Of note, there exists at least 35 plaques in the garden dedicated to families and World War II veterans and Father Tony Ward, who served at St Paul's for 30 years. Of considerable concern, Your Majesty, is the fact that the ashes of Minister Thomas Ian Lawrence, who passed away in 1981, are interred in the altar of the church. I have also been advised that the ashes of another priest predated the internment of the ashes.
I just need to interrupt you. So that was the 3-minute bell. Thank you. So you're seeking another extension to five
yes,
minutes?
Please.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've also been advised that the ashes of another priest predated the internment of the ashes of Minister Lawrence are also under the altar. A further concern is the fact that the ashes of Father Tony Woods are also in the memorial garden of the church. The ashes of two World War II veterans are also in the northern memorial garden of the church grounds. Ladies and gentlemen of the panel, I am here as a private citizen. However, I have to say to you, I have never found myself in the position I find myself this evening. I am the most senior elected person on this council, which happens to be one of the largest councils in the country. This church, I believe, should be retained. I am appealing to you for it to be retained. It should be an adaptive reuse of the building. The church has already, the Anglican diocese has already set a precedent with Lane Cove. They are prepared to keep that church in the hall. It is of not a significantly historical significance as St Paul's, but they're prepared to do it in Lane Cove. Is this a tale of two cities where the diocese looks down on my area but is prepared to support other areas? We are desperately in need of retaining our heritage for our local community. And it just stuns me that there is no discussion from the government in relation to this. I do note in the report before you on page 10, it states as part of the timeline, and you'll note that the times I've attempted to retain this building for heritage. November 2024, the last two lines state that the department considered the council as the local authority was most appropriately placed to consider any future local listing of the land. I have tried and tried in this particular, in this very arena, to have this building listed as part of the heritage significance, but unfortunately this council is very pro-development, and I do urge you to not go ahead with the demolition DA tonight, to at least defer it. The development application is a state significant development application, I understand, has not been determined by the department, and yet the diocese wants to go ahead and demolish. My view is that this may be a vacant site for many, many years to come. This is a site that has received national significance. It is very, very concerning to me that all the reports, particularly by Sue Rosen, a letter, an updated report in 2023, which was not provided to the elected representatives at the time that we deliberated on this particular issue, that concerns me. And as I said, the precedent has already been set by the diocese in Lane Cove. They're prepared to retain that building, but they're not prepared to retain our building. There has been no...
You've gone well over the 5 minutes, so I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up now. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if there are any questions or...
See if there are any questions. No questions. Thank you for coming along this evening. Thank you. So the next speaker I have is the Reverend Dr. John Reynolds Bunyan.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for the opportunity to speak. Actually, for some years with heart failure and stress, all those other things, it's very difficult for me now to speak in public, but I thought I should on this occasion. Background, Rector of Chester Hill within the city for 22 years until retirement in 2001, holding the Archbishop's General Licence since then. Age 89, more than 27 years, a weekly volunteer chaplain at Bankstown Hospital there last Friday. Honorary chaplain of two ex-service organisations, patron of Campbelltown's Historical Society, member of the National Trust New South Wales, excuse my breathlessness, the Australian Conservation Foundation, in the UK the National Church Trust, Church Conservation Trust, Friends of Friendless Churches, members of the Australian Sustainable Australian Party. Its aims including the decorrupting of politics, environmental protection, and stopping overdevelopment. I've known St. Paul's Church since 1978, friend of Father Tony Wood and Father Tom Lawrence, whose earthly remains we know are there. St. Paul's is one of the most important heritage buildings in this city, with a simplified modern Gothic design by the same architect that extended St. Albans Epping. The other significant heritage buildings in Bankstown, church buildings, religious buildings, I think are St. Felix, Roman Catholic Church, and the Punchbowl Mosque. One has been lost. As Jewish people moved away from Bankstown, the Jewish synagogue, which I remember well, with the Star of David design, was demolished. We must not lose the other building, the other main building, representing Judeo-Christian spiritual and heritage and significance. The sacred sites of Indigenous Australians and of Muslims would not be destroyed in this way. Christian sacred spaces should be similarly respected, and we are concerned with sacred spaces. The Anglican Church holds its property only under the Anglican Church of Australia Constitution Act of 1961. And an official document of our church called a homily is entirely devoted to reverence for sacred spaces, describing a consecrated church building as a house of God and temple of the Lord. I think there's one other submission to come in, pointing out other major legal obstacles to any demolition. In the past, St. Paul's was a true parish church. That means a community church welcoming all. For example, the many who brought children for baptism every Sunday at 12 o'clock. All accepted without question in the same way that Jesus accepted children and the parallel is set out in our prayer book, the official standard of worship in our church. With unlawful changes made, traditional worshippers at St. Paul's therefore tended to leave, eventually replaced by a congregation of good...
That's the three-minute bell. So do you want another 2 minutes finish?
Thank you. I'll get as far as I can. Good people, largely indifferent to the significance, however, of the building and to the law and teaching of our church. In any case, there's ample room at St. Paul's, and a wealthy diocese can find other means of support for the property and ministry, as it has done in other places, including my own former church, St. John Mark's Chester Hill. A worship space hidden and closed inside the proposed development would not be noticed by those who pass by on foot or in car, whatever outer signage was installed. It would be a hidden conventicle rather than the present historic war memorial, Parish Church of Bankstown, with its unique physical and visible witness on Chapel Road to Christianity, the original part of this now diverse community. At Bankstown Hospital, on the 26th of September, a detailed sample census of patients showed that 260 patients identified as Christian, 62 as Muslim, almost four times as many Christians as Muslim. But in the city generally, as we know, about a quarter of the people are Muslim, and noting Muslim regard for its holy places here and overseas, and Muslim concern for good architecture, and noting that the best Jews and Christians and Muslims have some important spiritual concerns in common, I hope local Muslims will, if need be, also support the retention of St. Paul's. Helping in this way, as others, especially traditional law-abiding Anglicans, are helping to bring about, if not tonight, once and for all, the dismissal of this dreadful big money dream, and big money is involved, and by establishing once and for all the important heritage of status of St. Paul's. I think I better stop there. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. I'll just check. Did anyone have any questions? Thank you for coming along this evening. And
thank you for the invitation.
Take your time getting back to your seat. Thank you.
Oh, good. Thank you. I'm steady even when I'm sober.
So the next speaker I have registered is Antoinette Ravkin to read the objection of Lola Moulston. Thank you. Please proceed.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and panel. I've been asked to read out a letter that Mrs. Lola Moulston has written at 97. She's very mentally sharp, but it's physically difficult for her to get here. And this is her letter. I've been involved in some... Speak up. Okay. I have been involved in St. Paul's Church for all of my 97 years. I was married there. My five children were christened, confirmed, and several were also married in the church. My parents' funerals were held in the church, and I am devastated and outraged that you are planning to destroy our history. My parents were involved in fundraising to build a new church. My father, Frank Margulies was a rector's warden at the time of his death. My mother, Amy Margulies, was on the flower roster and belonged to the Ladies' Guild. They regularly held street stalls, fetes and bus trips. The latter was really appreciated by folk without transport. Of course, a cup of tea was also supplied. Alan Maunsell, of who you've already heard, whose memorial chair donated by his friends rests within the sanctuary. I am deeply disturbed to think that this and other memorials will be erased from the historical and spiritual home. And did you know that the original St. Paul's Church, now the Church Hall, also served the community as a book library that was open to all? As a small child who attended St. Paul's with my parents, I was always delighted to have access to this library. At that time, there wasn't a library in Bankstown. St. Paul's Rectory is the birthplace of St. Paul's Choir School. In 1984, Father Tony Ward established the choir with 15 students. Today, it's Georges River Grammar School. The church is part of a large community. It has deep historical roots and still has the power to enrich, to love, and to embrace not just those who worship within, but to be of great comfort to any member of the community, regardless of their faith. Is it really a progressive act to demolish such a significantly historical building, or are we witnessing a voracious greed that would seem to be more frequently in our modern world? Yours faithfully, Mrs. Lola Molston.
Thank you. I'll just check if there are any questions.
No, okay, thanks.
Thank you for coming along this evening. Thank you. The next speaker I have registered is Bing Wu from the Save St. Paul Bankstown Incorporated. Thank you. Please proceed.
Hi, everyone. My name is Bing Wu. I speak today as an artist in the parishioner of St. Paul's Church for almost 20 years, and as also an unofficial historian who has witnessed the long journey of this parish community. Since 2016, when St. Paul's first began to discussions about the redevelopment, many parishioners have left to nearby church. We were initially told that the survey was to explore the church's future, but only later discovered that redevelopment would mean the demolition of St. Paul's. We were told that this would secure the ministerial income through the new apartments. Some faithful members stayed, but many of us experienced the fear and the criticism, even silence within our own church, when we continued to raise the objection to the demolition. In 2021, Bankstown Council resumed the St. Paul site for 11-story apartments. Then in 2023, the Canterbury Bankstown Council master plan increased this to 18 stories. Now, under the statewide accelerated program, TOD, the site has been resumed again, this time for a 23-story residential tower with 185 apartments in a mixed commercial use. You may have heard that the council claim it has fought a tooth and a nail to have St. Paul's heritage listed. The truth tells a different story. Over the last 10 years, despite multiple independent heritage assessments commissioned by council, all concluding that St. Paul is locally significant, the site was repeatedly excluded from Heritage Register. Even Heritage New South Wales urged St. Paul's be added to the local environment plan, given it clearly has a range of local heritage value. Well, parishioners were told that a heritage listing would put a council in charge of St. Paul's instead of God. Our minister even claimed that God has spoke to say that St. Paul will not be demolished if we sign a petition.
Sorry, that was the 3-minute bill. So do you need another 2 minutes?
Yes, please. Thank you. 2 minutes. Imply that those who object were somehow opposing God. But St. Paul itself is a living testament, built through the dedication, fundraising, and the faith of generations of parishioners. It holds deep social and spiritual significance for Bankstown. It is also the final resting place for our fallen Anzac heroes, ex-servicemen, priests, parishioners, and the notable English family. The foundational stone was laid in 1938, completed in 1961, and its 1968 consecration deed declared the church and the land were forever hereafter separated, dedicated, and consecrated for Anglican worship, establishing a bond of trust for a benefit of the local congregation. As heritage expert Dr. Sue Rosen from Sue Rosen Associates and Jeff Ashley from Ashley Built Heritage stated in their joint 2023 letter to the council CEO and the councillors, why we believe that St. Paul's easily qualify for heritage listing based on the New South Wales heritage criteria. It is the love for St. Paul's strongly demonstrated by Bankstown community. That should now be listened to. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just check. Are there any questions?
Okay.
No questions. Thank you for coming along this evening. The next speaker is Roy Lumby.
Madam Chair, fellow members, I'm Dr. Roy Lumby. I'm a heritage consultant with about 35 years' experience in the realm of architectural conservation. What I'm saying may have been touched on by Bing Wu, but with your permission, I should like to proceed. I was co-author of the respected heritage practitioner Sue Rosen and Associates' St. Paul's Church Heritage Assessment Supplement, which was a response to the IHO that was placed on St. Paul's Church in 2015. This was commissioned by council, and it recommended listing the church for several reasons. So the church has historical significance, showing evidence of the historical development of Bankstown and evidence of its social history. It is tangible evidence of the pre- and post-World War II growth and consolidation of Bankstown. It has historical associations with locally significant families, several of whom are memorialised in the very fabric of the church. It is also associated with architect Norman McPherson, who designed quite a large number of churches in New South Wales between 1930 and 1970 and is regarded as one of the finest exponents of church architecture in that period in the state. Several are heritage listed, the latest one being the Church of St. Albans at Epping, which is very similar in appearance to St. Paul's. It too shares a similar history of being an extension of a 1930s church added to in the early 1960s. It too is the subject of potential development. The church is retained and residential buildings are to be constructed behind the church. St. Paul's has aesthetic significance for its architectural qualities, notably the embodiment of pre-war Romanesque and the post-war ecclesiastical styles. It has great townscape value, and the spatial character, along with the integrity of, integrity of its interior, is also noteworthy. The church is socially significant to present day community members, and parishioners past and present, and it's representative of the development of religious architecture during the middle third of the 20th century, and also representative of the architectural styles that I mentioned a little earlier. Now, this assessment was supported by the findings of several respected heritage practitioners, Jeff Ashley of Ashley Built Heritage, peer-reviewed the report, and the peer review was commissioned by council. Subsequently, Extent Heritage did a local government-wide heritage study commissioned by council in 2021. Godden Mackay Logan's 2024 Bankstown State-led Rezoning Heritage Significant Report. Both of these acknowledge the heritage.
Oh, sorry, that's the 3 minute bell. Are you seeking another 2 minutes?
If I could.
Thank you.
Thank you. So all of these reports, most of which were commissioned, if not all of them, by council, strongly supported the listing of the building. Heritage New South Wales has also written to council requesting it to reconsider listing the church, but evidently with no response. Council's Heritage Advisory Committee supported listing, but council instead seems to have accepted Graham Brooks Associates and Weir Phillips' peer review of this report, which forms part of the applicant's submission. Now, I've read the general conditions of consent appended to the notes attached to this agenda tonight, and should the panel support recommendations for demolition, and I hope this does not happen, the following conditions should apply to the consent because of the significance of the building. The archival recording should be expanded to include measured drawings of the site and the building, and they should be in accordance with the published DCC EEW guidelines. Future approvals should ensure a dedicated place of worship in future development for the community. So consent conditions should include a place of worship, an interpretation strategy, plan and implementation of interpretation, which includes salvaged items, that all of this should be readily accessible to the community. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just check if there are any questions.
Thank you.
Look, I do have one. Sorry, Doctor. Yes, I had a question. Just in what you just said a minute ago about future development applications, ensuring that there's a place of public worship on the site, just picking up on that point that you made about any future application requiring a place of public worship on the site. Do you see that as, so we've got the built heritage and social heritage, do you see that as an important element of that site, that it should have a place of public worship?
Yes, it's been associated with worship since the early 20th century, and it's an integral and important part of the history of the community of Bankstown.
Yes, so but that would apply to schools, for example, like a school site, a public hall, a local community hall. But you, basically what you're saying is, so I just understand it, that because there's been a place of public worship, or I'll just call it church, or on this site for so long, that site should always have a place of public worship.
Well, it's part of the interpretation of the site, and obviously these things depend upon the circumstances of each individual site.
Yeah.
But I think the significance of the site as a place of worship is sufficiently important as part of the heritage of the place for that to continue.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Vasilios Xanthakos.
Okay, good afternoon, members of the panel. I represent the often undermined young people of Canterbury Bankstown. Today is a sombre day. It marks not merely the proposed demolition of all existing structures, but the potential erasure of nearly a century of faith, community, and remembrance, the loss of both our Anzac heritage and our spiritual identity. The proposal before you is fundamentally incongruent with Council's own vision. The Canterbury-Bankstown Connective City 2036 plan states the city's historic places and places of character are largely preserved. These places have a sense of community, identity, and belonging that the local community is proud of. That pride echoes here tonight in the chamber. Council's Development Control Plan, Chapter 6.2, Bankstown City Centre, revised only months ago, in Section 2.1, Principle 9, further directs that the design of new development at St. Paul's Anglican Church should maximise the use of existing building fabric, such as stained glass windows, masonry, and the iconic bell tower. Surrounding developments should be complementary and include landscaping and materiality that complements the church building. That guidance is even illustrated beside in the rendering of St. Paul's, standing proud in its modest yet imposing stature. Yet the proposed state significant development bears no resemblance to what our returned servicemen, their families, or council envisioned. It's a macabre pastiche of borrowed elements assembled into a so-called multi-purpose space, not a place of devotion. This is not preservation, it's desecration. Nearby St. Euphemia Church, built in 1964, stands as proof that heritage and progress can coexist, but only when preservation is prioritised. All Saints Belmore, originally All Saints Anglican, was redeveloped in the same period and has maintained its exclusive use as a public place of worship. The same can be said for St. Stephanus in Hurlston Park, which was also erected in the 1930s, originally St. Stephen's Anglican Church, still used as a primary place of worship. Built by returned servicemen and their families, St. Paul's is a tangible memorial to their sacrifice for my generation. For nearly a century, it has served as a place of worship and reflection, a constant symbol of continuity through every social and economic change. Now it faces destruction, not through neglect, but in the name of redevelopment. A multi-purpose space within the tower cannot replace what St. Paul's represents. A church is a sacred space, set apart to meet the spiritual and communal needs of its people. Those needs cannot be condensed into an annex of a commercial project. This proposal is presented as progress, but progress without preservation, in truth, is loss. When our servicemen returned from war, they built St. Paul's to honour both their faith and their fallen comrades. To demolish it now would be to dishonour that legacy, placing profits before profits, with a PH. Even in the city, great cities such as London, development respects its heritage. St. Paul's Cathedral still defines a skyline around it. Heritage should guide the future, not be erased by it. Bankstown and St. Paul's deserve that same respect. I'm nearly done. Multiple independent heritage assessments recognise the church's local significance as a rare surviving example of mid-20th century ecclesiastical architecture and an irreplaceable link to the district's cultural history. Members of the panel, once a church of this meaning is gone, it cannot be rebuilt. What replaces it may provide density, but not depth. Accommodation, but not identity. I respectfully ask the panel to protect St. Paul's on behalf of the young people of Canterbury-Bankstown, to preserve our future, to preserve not only a building, but the faith, memory, and the community it embodies.
Thank you. I'll just check. Are there any questions? Thank you for coming along this evening. So that's the last of the members of the public. I now have the first representative of the applicant, Tom Fuggle, Senior Project Manager from Sustainable Development Group Limited.
Hi, my name is Tom Fuggle. I'm here tonight to represent St. Paul's Anglican Church. St. Paul's has been a part of the Bankstown community for well over 100 years, running a range of community activities, such as weekly English classes, in addition to Sunday services. We hope for it to be able to remain a part of the community for generations to come. But the current church and associated facilities are no longer fit for purpose, and ongoing maintenance costs are unsustainable. As such, we have been investigating options for the church site for a number of years. The decision to redevelop has been a difficult one for the congregation, which cares deeply for those that want to preserve the church. Their perspective has been carefully heard. However, in order for St. Paul's to continue to serve the community for generations to come, it was decided to redevelop the site for social and affordable housing alongside a new and expanded church and community facilities. The project will deliver 185 desperately needed social and affordable housing units in the heart of Bankstown for essential workers, seniors, and women over 55. The plans also include a new preschool. Importantly, the new church and community facilities will also be open for community use during non-service times. The federal government has identified the St. Paul's site as one of 183 projects across Australia to be funded under its Housing Australia Future Fund, and the project has reached contractual close with Housing Australia. The state government's rezoning in November last year earmarked the St. Paul's site as having capacity for a 23-storey development. Its heritage significance was carefully considered by the government at that point, and a decision was made not to heritage list the site. Heritage New South Wales does not support the listing of the site. Nonetheless, the parish would like to preserve and repurpose items of historical significance from the existing church wherever possible, while also delivering the essential social infrastructure the project promises for Bankstown. The history and legacy of the existing church is being carefully considered, and parts of it will be incorporated into the proposed design so future generations can learn about the site's history. Thank you.
I think there are some questions. Alison, you had some questions?
Thank you for that. Just, we understand that there's a current SSD application in that I think you've just alluded to in terms of providing for a kind of a multi-purpose space, which is intended to be for church uses as well, in addition to others. I'm also would understand that application also seeks demolition. So I'm just wondering why you've chosen to lodge a separate application for demolition separate from that application that's currently under consideration and presumably subject to the funding arrangements from the federal government for the delivery of social and affordable housing.
Yes, so I'm happy to talk to that. So I think a comment was made previously about concerns about the site remaining demolished and vacant for years. Actually, it's the opposite. We're working under very strict timeframes with Housing Australia. So really, this application, the intention is to ease the pressure on those timeframes. So we do currently have an SSDA lodged. We're expecting the determination of that will not be before the determination of this. But this demolition DA would help us with the planning of the site works. So the intention would be that actually we would move ahead and there would not be a vacant site for any period of time. Does that answer your question?
It to some extent, and I basically it's a management of a project approach, a timeline, because that application clearly, obviously, has included the request for demolition. I suppose another part to the question is that application currently has provision for, as you said, the congregation space, church space, community space. Is that a decision that the diocesan, who looks after the Anglican Church Property Trust, have they made that decision that application and anything that gets built on that site, if it actually does get approval, would always have a church use? Or is there a possibility that could be removed from the application?
Absolutely. The driver for the project is to have a church there in a sustainable way for a long period of time. So at the very heart of the SSDA proposal is the church space. It's a new church space.
Because we're just, as you've heard tonight, some of the consideration of the site from a heritage point of view was the ongoing use in some way, shape or form for that church and broader community, because that has been such an important part of the community as well. So
absolutely. And those, I mean, the SSDA proposals are publicly available, and the presence of the church and the identity of the church in those proposals is very clear.
Yes, but we also, I'm just looking at all possibilities. We do know that applications can get amended or changed, but I just wanted to understand that it's a fundamental aspect of that application that there be a church facility on the site.
Absolutely.
Maybe not looking like what it is today, but it would be that use.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Just a quick one. In the SSDA documentation, is there any consideration of what will happen to the existing parishioners while the construction is going on?
So, that's not within the detail of the SSDA, but the church has published its plans for temporary relocation. Just on Sunday, they made those known to the congregation.
Okay, thank you.
I just had a question. Are you aware of anywhere else where the Anglican Church has done this, that where there was like obviously a dedicated church with a history like this, where they proposed or have actually demolished it and then incorporated a place of public worship in some new multifunctional development as proposed here?
There's examples globally of that having been done. I wouldn't know which to reference the most applicable one to this scenario, but there are, in terms of projects that include housing and include a new church, planning permission was recently granted for one at Lane Cove. I'm joined by our town planner, Michael Rowe. He could probably answer that question better than I could.
Okay, thank you. No more questions. Thank you for coming along and speaking. And so the next speaker is Michael Rowe, director from Beam Planning, the applicant's town planning representative.
Good evening, panel. I've got a speech but I've also, since there are questions, I might do the speech, and then if there's more questions or things that flow out of that, I can do those, if that sounds good. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak this evening. We naturally strongly support the recommendation from Council and its assessment. As Tom's spoken to, the demolition DA that's before you facilitates early works to commence on site to assist the delivery of some very significant social and affordable housing that also includes a new church and community facilities. The Assessing Officer's report provides a very clear history of the consideration regarding the site's heritage significance. And I encourage you to get into the detail of that and some of that reporting, because we've heard a selective history of what has happened on this site. Fundamentally, both at a political and at a technical level, the listing of this building has not been supported on numerous occasions. And there's a reason for that. The heritage demolition report that was submitted with the DA is very comprehensive, and we've got Dov from GBA here to answer technical heritage questions, if that's of assistance. And it was supported by a peer review prepared by Weir Phillips. The department ultimately considered the heritage significance most recently as part of the TOD process. And then in Council's assessment that's before you, they've also considered it. And when you objectively consider the significance of this building through New South Wales Heritage Office's established framework for assessing heritage significance, the building does not meet any of the threshold significance required for a heritage listing. And I give like a planner's summary kind of delving into what's in the detail of the report. And I do encourage you, if you haven't read that, to get into that detail. But the architect McPherson, he was considered to be a journeyman architect rather than an important, innovative or influential one. And the building was constructed in 1938. It didn't actually reflect his original designs. The church was completed with a simplified facade. It had no bell tower. and none of the surrounding buildings that were part of the design were constructed. Then a major addition was done in 1961, where they demolished the front of the building and they replaced it with a completely different architectural style. We don't know the extent of McPherson was involved in that process at all, and it was replaced with a Romanesque facade with a modernist post-war ecclesiastical style. So we have two completely different styles coming together, and if you come from a heritage perspective, that's what might appear a pretty building if to some in the street, but from a purely heritage objective perspective, it was obviously significantly different in the styles that came in the 60s. The church is not important in demonstrating the characteristics of any of the architectural styles. Combination of the two in this case certainly doesn't result in an aesthetic or creative or technical importance of significance. The social, cultural and spiritual relationship between the congregation and St Paul's is also not unusual. Every place of worship typically has some level of connection with the community. If I could have the 2 minutes, please, Chair. When you go through all of those detailed criteria about the building, you can see why multiple times this has been considered but ultimately determined not to be heritage listed. However, and as Tom pointed to, this building is important to members of the community. We've heard that tonight. And for this church, that's important to the church as well. And there are lots of the people who are within the church community that are supportive. They didn't want it to be a us-versus community. It's important for the church and they do love the members of the community, even though they have a difference of opinion about what's the future of this site. And so we've worked with council, we've developed the salvage plan, we think that the recommended conditions are entirely appropriate. And I think here strike the balance between preserving the memory of this building commensurate with its true heritage significance. We don't want it to stop the delivery of the social infrastructure and the opportunity for this building to remain relevant and useful to the Bankstown community and for this church to continue to have an impact into the future. That's what this proposal was about for the church and for the Sydney Diocese. And so what is proposed is trying to find that balance between preserving that memory in a way that's appropriate but still allowing this to happen. And there's been a long strategic process to get to where we are. The significance of the building has been considered on multiple occasions, but ultimately determined not to list the building. And so accordingly, we request that the DA be approved, consistent with Council's recommendation, assessed in accordance with the statutory framework that's before us, and is going to facilitate a great outcome for the Bankstown community, not to mention significant affordable housing and community facilities. Thank you.
Let's check if there are any questions.
You referenced to the delivery of community facilities and the kind of continued function as part of the community is very much, it's not this application. It's very much reliant on the SSD application, which includes, I haven't had a reason to look at it in detail, but I'm told it includes kind of multi-purpose facilities for that purpose. We've heard tonight that it is the intent of the Sydney Diocese. I was going to check which one it is. That it is intended to maintain that, you know, I'm just going to say church facility on site. That's part of the application.
Yeah. So
there's no intention to amend that or change it.
No. There's a couple of things to help you with that. Is first and foremost, the LEP clause that was drafted, there's a site-specific clause for St Paul's, and that you can't achieve the FSR and uplift and height without delivering the community facilities and the place of public worship on site. And so whilst, yes, it's in a separate DA, there's, I guess, a level of certainty within the planning framework to ensure that that outcome's going to be delivered. Originally, when the Todd came in, it was just a community facility, and that was raised concern for the diocese about the fact that they actually, it's really important to them that the church is actually maintained on site. They have a strategic plan that's obviously it's publicly available but an internal document about what is their broader strategic vision for Sydney and how they're going to use the property to do their missional purposes. And part of that is identifying places like Bankstown, which has enormous growth plan for it, and going, the current facilities on site don't reflect what we see the future strategic vision for Bankstown, and we need facilities that are aligned with the scale of the population that's moving to these areas. And so for them, this is one of those, they have a, what they call the pilot project, but, and to your other question, Alison, about what are the other examples of this has happened, it hasn't really happened in the Sydney Diocese. This is a pilot project for them of how do we look at land that's strategically located and utilise it. We've got obviously public transport infrastructure for our missional purposes so that we can continue to do what we do as a church in all the ways that that's encompassed. And then also use the capacity. So from some of the public speakers that this is a project motivated by greed, this project is the residential component on top of this. There's a minister's dwelling, and outside of the minister's dwelling, like the rectory house, which is an apartment within the building, is 100%, 185 social and affordable housing dwellings. This is not motivated by greed. If there was, they would develop it for profit with build-to-sell apartments or in a build-to-rent scheme. This is actually about how do we use our assets to care for the community in a holistic manner.
Just to follow up on that, and we heard that, maybe I should have asked Tom about this, but it's that SSD application is an application that has tied to some federal funding. And in my experience, that federal funding has timeframes and requirements. Have you got, do you know what they are for that project?
Tom may be better at answering that question, but that
just
has been,
generally,
as I understand it, the reason why we separate out the demolition DA was because we're in a situation where the SSD, as you know, has a period of time and there's a lot of things that have to be considered. And most of the projects that got HAF funding already had approvals in place. This project didn't. And so there's been a lot of time pressure on the project team to get this application because of Housing Australia's requirements around the timing of delivery and when they have to have the dwellings online, which all works back from elections and timeframes about dwellings for the Housing Accord. And so it has been very much a driver for this project, and why we separate out the DA was to allow for works to start on site to, as Tom mentioned, ease the stress on the construction program working back from when Housing Australia need this to be delivered.
I think just to explain some of the questions is that this DA is just for demolition only. So it actually, it's incumbent upon us as a panel to turn our minds very much to the question of heritage. But this DA doesn't go to what else should be on the site. So that's very useful to understand the provisions in the LEP, which aren't in this report. That actually, as I understand what you've said, is incumbent upon any application on that site to deliver a place of public worship in some way, shape or form.
That's correct.
And that's what the current application is.
Yep.
Thanks.
And I just think for the benefit of the audience, I would imagine that this information that has just been delivered is probably giving you a degree of comfort. Anyway.
You don't happen to have the LEP clause handy, do you?
I don't have it to hand, but do you have a question on it? Because I'm relatively familiar with it.
So was it a site specific?
It's a site specific one. If you have the, does council have the LEP to hand, or
we
can?
We can ask the council afterwards in the briefing.
It's
so I just thought if you had it handy. Thank you.
St Paul's Anglican Church.
But it's in the LEP. It's not in the
LEP. It's 6 point something.
6 point something. Thank you.
Yeah.
So no more questions. That was our last speaker. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, actually, we do have the applicant's heritage expert here. If there were any questions, just said they're available. If there are any questions,
maybe one follow up. In terms of again, we are. It's incumbent on us to turn our minds to the heritage aspect. And part of that consideration of demolition is, and there's been elements that have been identified in that salvage report, it's just wondering whether there's been an interpretation strategy or a draft form of that prepared for the SSD. Again, it's not something that we've gone down that rabbit hole on. I do note that the heritage report does recommend it.
Yes.
And that's in this application. So just trying to understand the linkage, knowing full, as I said, that the reason you've bought, you've put in a separate application for demolition, but you do have a current application in that is considering it holistically. Just wondering where that, perhaps the heritage person might be able to answer it, where the interpretation strategies are at, if anywhere.
It's certainly the intention, but in that sequence of timing, and appreciate the challenge where you've got demolition without the DA in front of you, the intention was that, from memory, is that the interpretation strategy, which wasn't lodged with the exhibition, would be a condition of the SSD. I think that's right, people nodding at me. So there's certainly the intention for it to be prepared, but the sequence of that was about tied to the approval of the building.
Yes, no, we have no questions of your heritage expert. That being the case, there are no more speakers. Thank you for coming along this evening. As I indicated earlier, we'll now move into closed session where we'll determine the matter and the minutes, including our reasons, our determination and reasons, should be available on the council website by Friday. I'd like to thank my fellow panel members and the council staff for their assistance this evening and for those people who came along to address us. And I declare the meeting closed at 7 p.m. Thank you.